Hey guys, welcome to episode 126 of the JV Club with my final Boys of Summer guest, Mr. Keegan-Michael Key. I'm so thrilled to wrap up the summer of incredible interviews with some of my favorite guys. Although I will say too that there are many guys that I, you know, discussed it with, as I've said before, and hope to revisit with next summer. But this has just been such a treat to be able to do this. And thanks again, you guys, for those of you who enjoyed it. I think I only literally had one person say they didn't like it. And hopefully it's been, listen, tolerable for that listener. So I'm actually kind of front loading these intros because I am getting ready to leave for Scandinavia for a couple of weeks. I'm so excited. For those of you who listen to the podcast regularly, I feel like it's come up more than once that that's kind of been at the top of my list of places I haven't been yet. So I'm very, very excited to go there. I guess if anyone has any strong recommendations, they can email me on the Facebook page and let me know. It seems like I'm definitely going to be going to Copenhagen and Stockholm, probably also Oslo and Helsinki and maybe Tallinn. Okay, anyway, I wanted to get these intros out there. So I don't have shout outs prepped because I just recorded the Dave Holmes intro and did some shout outs, but I will catch up on all of that when I get back. And I hope everybody has a great couple of weeks. I'm going to record the intro for my first lady back. It's an episode that I recorded before the summer started. So I've been sitting on it for quite a while. And I hope you guys enjoy that one too. That took me a really long time to swallow just then. And I'll talk to you guys soon. Okay, bye.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
All right, great. Better than good. All right, not too bad. Okay.
This is going downhill. Marginally slowly.
We started at like content, slight enjoyment.
Yeah, it, like it wasn't. We didn't start at ecstasy.
Disturbed.
We only started at better, a little better than good.
Yeah.
I have a little stomach bug anyway, so that's what's
God.
Going on.
Oh, yeah. God. You brought your stomach bug over here. That's awful.
No, he likes it. I let him out every now and again. So he can just... He'll be back. I just let him go around. He'll maybe hang out with the dogs for a little bit.
Like a worm? Like a tapeworm?
Yeah, like a tapeworm, yeah.
Oh, that's your
secret.
Do
you have sugar cubes? Do you have sugar cubes and a glass of milk? Because I'll be right...
I do. Is that what tapeworms love? A little sugar and milk?
Someone told me something really graphic that I'm not even sure I want to share because it makes me gag when I think about it, about how one can extricate a tapeworm.
I don't know if that's a... Ugh. It's probably not an urban legend, but isn't it like you put raw meat near your buns?
Something like that. Or I'm saying you can go the long way around
and
sit with a bowl of milk, apparently, that has a piece of bread that's soaked in it and sugar. And then apparently you just stand there, mouth agape.
Are you serious? I think I'd rather have it come out my butt.
Oh, absolutely.
If you had to choose.
Why would I not?
You don't want to feel something wriggling coming out of your mouth. No. I mean, it's horrible either way.
Either way, it's horrible.
I'm not looking forward to getting mine.
I'll take the road less traveled. If I may.
Technically, you're not wrong. If you're a person who's shitting more than you're eating, you have a problem.
Then it's a completely different issue.
That's right. Yeah. But we're also here to talk about that because, as you know, this is a medical podcast.
Exactly.
I'm ready, willing, and able to talk about anyone's health problems. Let's take our first caller.
All right. Oh. So if anybody has anything to say about the sigmoid colon,
that's
my specialty.
Oh, all right. Wonderful.
It's deeper in the viscera.
I'm familiar with the psychiatrist Sigmund colon.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe I'm...
Groundbreaking work he did in anal retentive and anal expulsive science,
really
psychoscience. So, yes.
See that?
Oh, we could just do this. We could do this all day. Or we could do this until 6 o'clock when you have to leave.
We talked about anything.
We never talked about anything other than bowel movements. That's all we talked about.
And not even helpfully. A riff-raffy,
Half what we said were city myths.
That's right.
That's what I call them, city myths.
City myths.
Not urban legends.
Not urban legends.
They're city myths.
So much. It is. That's very.
It's a little more dangerous if they're city myths.
You think so?
Because it
sounds more like a San Francisco thing, like a sweet gay.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's a city.
That's
myth,
a city
honey.
Myth. Don't come on, sweetheart. You don't know that's a city myth. Let's get it together.
Yes. That's what I hear. I don't hear threat.
You don't hear like threat. You hear legends. You hear whimsical tale that's a little naughty.
I do.
That's you hear.
Exactly what I hear. I hear flittering glittery.
flittering glittery. Oh my God. That's the first time I've ever heard those two words together.
It's certainly
and
the first
I make up words
them.
Every day.
The flittering glitteries almost sound like they could be a sports team. That could be a sports team,
but only from San Francisco. Yeah.
Oh my God, do people do that ever? Do people say like, I've got something for you?
Oh.
I've got something for you. Use it. Use it on your show.
Yeah.
I've got something for you. It's a gift.
I don't mind if people say that. It's just when they're presumptuous and they say, use it. not you could use this if you want to, like it's yours, yeah. No big deal. If they say, it's yours, no big deal, forget it.
Right.
If they keep prostrating themselves as they're giving their idea, that I'm like, oh, that's sweet.
Yes.
But when they go, use it, I'm like, you've just guaranteed that I absolutely won't use it.
You owe it to comedy. How dare you think about not using it? If I have, I'm checking back with you. I haven't seen it in...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I have friends like that.
That's really
funny. Not friends so much as acquaintances like that. It's just like, I just don't know why you're not doing the show.
Oh.
Well, it's probably... because of the three shows that I have to do
is correct.
Maybe why I'm not doing your show at this particular moment
correct.
In time. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. That sounded horrible.
I mean, the problem is, no, but the thing is that, and I'll just exercise my own guilt demons about having you on the podcast, but I really am so excited that you're doing it, is that you're so gracious. You know what I mean? You're so gracious that people want to still ask you stuff. And I feel like to a much lower degree, because I'm fairly busy also, I also have that problem sometimes. Like, I want to say yes to as much as I possibly can.
I'm the worst.
Don't want people to stop asking because I feel like that will be a reflection of something in me that has changed over.
Correct.
And I don't want to feel like that.
You know what, Janet? That's it. That's actually nails it on the head more than anything else. So my poor wife... who has to, like right now, you know, I said, I'm going to be home at 6. Now, I'll be quite honest. My wife does not know I'm doing a podcast right now. She goes, but you're not getting paid for that.
Right.
So why are you doing that?
Right,
and I'm saying, because it's the thing, because that's something I want to do.
Right.
You know, but I'm with you. It's not about them never asking again. It's about them reflecting that there's this change in me that I've gone, oh no, I'm too big, quote unquote, to do that.
Right.
Or my time is more valuable than that. Or my time, or what's even worse is my time is more valuable than that person's honest energy, like their honest effort.
Right.
And so you're right. It's hard. I am really bad at saying no.
Yeah.
Really, really bad.
Yeah.
And what you just said is more to the point than what I tell myself it is, which is, hey man, you got to make hay when the sun is shining. Hey, this is where we're at right now in our lives.
Right.
And if people are making offers, you got to say yes because we're a struggling actor for something. No, that's not what it is. It's much more deeply psychological than that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, goddamn us both.
Look,
straight
to hell.
What are we going to do? What are you going to do? I lucked out because you happen to live nearby. Which is
right,
wonderful.
Yes, exactly. I'm like, this is
very
on my way
convenient.
Home. So
yeah.
I could unguilt half
right.
the guilt to
that's
do
right.
it. Yeah.
Traffic, listen, it could be that if you were still in the car right now for some reason, it could be
construction.
Construction.
An errant coyote.
That's right.
Anything.
The city
especially where
really
we live.
Shut down for that, do they?
What's that?
I feel like people would be like, and then I just hit it.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That's another coyote that's not going to eat my poodle.
Well, yeah, this city is replete with SUVs as it is. You wouldn't even see them or feel them if you hit them.
Why do
people in our neighborhood, now for anybody listening to this podcast, they don't know what kind of a hilly, one might even say mildly mountainous area that you and I live in.
Yes.
Don't buy small dogs. Don't buy them.
Yeah.
And other thing, don't buy cats. Do not buy a cat with the purpose of having an outdoor cat in our neighborhood or you won't have a cat.
Oh my God.
No, who does?
I know.
Janet,
I still see like wandering cats with collars that are outdoor cats up here and I think you're just it's almost like I'm a cartoon, like in a cartoon world, I see like a ham instead of a,
or a sucker. Well, the person is a sucker, and the sucker is walking a small butter-basted ham. I'm not even sure what a butter-basted ham is, but that's how delicious it looks.
Delicious and southern.
Especially to these southern coyotes. Look at this little ham. It's got shorter legs than me.
I know.
I don't know why people do it.
One of the scariest experiences I have had in this house, and it didn't even turn out to be as, you know, what I'm about to say, like, that implies that I heard someone being eaten. That's not even the case. But there was, I awoke one morning around like 7:30 to the most blood-curdling human scream I've ever heard.
Human scream.
Human scream. And it didn't subside. It wasn't like a one-time, like a surprise scream. It was screaming, like, no! No! To the point where I was like, I'm hearing someone watch someone get murdered, or I'm hearing someone being murdered.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I bolted out of bed, ran out onto the deck, and like looked down to see what was going on. And by the time I had sort of like, you know, jolted myself awake enough to even do that, the threat was over. A woman was sobbing, holding a small dog, talking to another neighbor who had gotten there faster because it was down the hill. And, you know, it's a canyon, so everything echoes. So I could hear her as if she were standing
next to me. As if you're standing next to you, right?
She was like, I had my dog off leash. First of all, you had your small dog off leash. And we were walking, and I just looked, and all of a sudden there was a coyote right over there, and my dog started to run towards it. And I was like, of course that's horrifying, but you created that situation on several levels.
Yeah. Yeah. I was walking my dogs the other day. Just walking the dogs the other day. I have two dogs, and I have a 15-year-old shepherd mix, and I have a 4-year-old American bulldog.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
And they
I got lustful. I'm sorry.
And yeah, I was like, okay, all right. No, but the American bulldog, you know, she looks like a pit bulldog, you know, and she's the sweetest animal ever. But this guy was, you know, the AAA guy was helping this guy with his car. And then this little King Charles Spaniel zips around the corner. He's like, Scotty, hey, you know better. No, no, don't say you know better to dogs.
Yeah.
You want to know why? You want to know why?
Because sure
they're dogs.
Better.
They're dogs.
They sure
you know better. Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. He's a dog, and I have a dog. So he runs around, runs right at my dog's face. My dog goes, hark! And then he goes, hark! And runs away. Yeah. And the guy looks at my dog and goes, ooh, a fighter. And I'm like, yeah, a fighter. Because your dog ran full on at my dog.
Yeah.
That's why my dog's a fighter.
Yeah.
My dog, who, by the way, is on leash.
Yeah.
And was just, there's no way this dog was going to hurt my dog. But this dog charged, unleashed dog charged my unleashed dog.
Yeah, now, I've had that happen too, where my dog will snap at a chihuahua that's prancing around its legs when he's on a leash.
Yeah.
And people are like, wow, unfriendly, huh? And you're like,
wow,
well, let's
off leash, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I'm unfriendly, certainly, under these circumstances now that this is happening.
I don't understand it. I don't understand. And I have a friend, she has a little shih tzu, and she walks her shih tzu, and people will be walking the dog off leash, and they'll go, it's okay, he's friendly. And my friend goes, it's not, because she's not.
Yeah.
She's not. See, I keep my dog on a leash because I'm not, you shouldn't be afraid of what your dog's going to do, but I am, and I'm on a leash, and it's the law.
Yeah.
So get your dog on a leash.
Yeah. And also, like, dogs have different behavior when they're on leashes, so it's so...
Absolutely.
It's like torture to have your dog on a leash and to have some other dog prancing around not on
a
leash.
Correct.
That's like... That's a mean thing to do. Like, suddenly you feel bad for your dog
because
you're following the law.
Yeah. And it's both dogs. I mean, both dogs don't know how to handle that situation.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, you know, anyway. It's,
oh, my God. We could,
once
dog
again...
Dog talk.
Butts... And leashes. That's what we're dealing with today.
A lot of the same listeners are into both.
Into both things. Butts
divisive.
And leashes. No, it's not
that divisive.
It's a very special kind of listener.
Let me acknowledge that listener. Let me segue this away. Did you grow up with dogs?
Oh, yeah. I've never not had a dog in my life.
Oh, wow.
I think for the 3 years I was in graduate school, like a year and a half, we didn't have the dog, and then my roommate bought a dog. I still consider, you know, I go home to Michigan and see my dog.
Yeah.
So still I had a dog, but we've never not had a dog. We had a dog when I was 18 months old, and my wife never not had dogs her entire life. Both of us dog people to the bone.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So yeah, how about you? You've always had dogs?
No, I never had.
Oh, you never had a dog?
I never had a dog until the dog I have now, who is 12. So I've had him 11 years.
Yeah.
That's a lie. I'm lying. Oh, no, I know I'm not lying. I'm telling you. You know what? I wish I've said this before, and I really, we won't continue talking about dogs nonstop, but I almost wish that he showed age more. You know what I mean?
My 15-year-old's the same way.
The same thing happened with my cat when I, because I did, I've had a couple of cats. I didn't in general have a lot of pets, but my cat was 17, but she just didn't seem like it. Yeah. And then when she just died, yeah, I was like, well, I wasn't prepared for that at all. She seemed the same to me.
Yeah, since she was six.
Two. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, yes, but so I sort of lose track of the years because I keep kind of thinking like, well, sooner or later he's going to start. And like, it just still
it just never happened. It's not happening.
It's great.
Yeah. That's my guy too. He's 15 and I'm like, is this animal riddled with cancer and we don't know it?
I mean, he just, because they hide it from you too.
Well, that's, like, it's natural instinct. Like, the same thing with birds. Like I've had birds in my life too. If a bird looks sick, it's going to die in about 12 hours because they hide looking sick because it's a protection. It's a defense mechanism.
Yeah.
Don't look sick. Mm. And so anyway, God, this is morbid. What are we doing?
I'm interested that you had birds though, because I feel like I've said this before. I like to call up the marvelous Kathleen Rose Perkins, who has birds, and they're very smart birds.
Yeah.
And I always say, like, I don't feel like a person who didn't ever have birds as a young person is like, you know what I think I'm gonna get? I don't think people, like adult people, sort of on a whim go become bird owners. And maybe I'm wrong about
this.
That.
That's my bird journey. My roommate had a cockatiel. My roommate in graduate school had a cockatiel, which he had had through college. Mm-hmm. And then he got the cockatiel, and then all of our other friends, who were our other fellow students, like two of them got cockatiels.
Yeah.
And then, or three of them might have gotten cockatiels, three of the girls. And then the cockatiel died, and my roommate kind of went on a little bit of a breakdown. And then it got weird. So then for a little bit of time, we were living in like a 680 square foot apartment, and we had four parakeets, two conures, a parrot, a ball python, a Chinese water lizard, and I'm skipping an animal.
Dr. Doolittle.
Yeah, it was Dr. Doolittle's. Yeah, we were Dr. Doolittle's.
What? Doctors Doolittle.
And the doctors Doolittle, yes. But trust me, we did not do little.
That's a lot of maintenance.
And then he kind of was like swapping out birds. So then he'd have this, like a cherry-topped conure. And then he never had like a huge African, a conure is just a South American parrot.
Okay, you must have known that. I feel like I had a blank look about the conure.
Like,
that's the one thing I don't know.
Lorikeets and parakeets and cherokees are different. You know, these things are conures, and they're from, it's different. It's just a regional thing. Parrots are from Africa. Conures are from South America.
Okay.
So, but we had these reptiles and birds in our house. So he came about being a bird owner. Now, I never owned any of these birds.
Mm-hmm.
And he became a bird owner as he went, you know, as an adult. So, like, I think his cockatiel, the first one he had, he got when he was 18 or 17.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's just, and the other thing is, birds are a huge, huge responsibility, because if you have to put birds in your will.
Because if you're
in your 20s or 30s and you buy a bird, your bird's going to outlive you by 40 years.
Isn't that amazing?
Isn't that crazy?
Because I heard that, I think it was like a This American Life episode, there was a woman who had this African gray or something, or maybe it was even a louder bird than that, like a mynah or something. And it was just her and that bird, and they were so bonded. And then when she fell in love and got married and had kids, her whole family hates that bird.
Oh, of course they do. The bird's pissed.
The bird hates them. Yeah. And is loud and horrible and shrieky, and even like the reporter asking her, I wonder if I've talked about this before, so I was fascinated by this episode. But the reporter, when they asked her, like, what kind of sounds, you know, the kids are, I'm listening to the kids complain about this bird, what kind of sounds does the bird make that are so bad? And even she is like, I mean, they're dreadful. Even she loves the bird. It's like, it's unlivable.
It's unlivable.
We're going
it's
to
really,
continue living with this bird.
It's not a tenable situation.
No,
I have a very dear friend who used to do our makeup on Mad TV, and she has like four birds, and they're I love them. And there's one that doesn't want you near her. They're all different cockatoos, like a Victoria cockatoo and an umbrella cockatoo. And then she has this beautiful, gorgeous macaw. And he is loud, loud.
Mm-hmm.
And then she has a gray. Was it a Cameroon? An African gray. And it was her grandmother's, or maybe, no, was it her grandmother's? It was her ex-husband's grandmother's. And one day I was at her house.
What's that? It's just great. That's just so amazing.
I love them. I just think they're amazing.
Don't think about that, though, but the idea that you would will a bird.
You have to will it.
Yeah, you have to know someone's going to take care of that bird.
If you take care of your bird, it's going, they live 80 years.
Yeah.
So it's going to outlive you. And so she said, you know, but I remember we were sitting in her living room one time having a conversation. And I said, I think she was still married at the time. I said, your husband, he's not here. And she goes, no. And I said, is that, oh. And I said, because there's clearly not an old woman in your apartment either. And she went, no, that's the African gray. And I said, so that's weird when you hear an organism speaking in the voice of your dead mother-in-law.
Oh my God.
In your house. Just, or grandmother-in-law, yeah, or whatever it was, sure. You know? And it just sounded like we were having a conversation in the living room. There was just an old lady muttering to herself in the living room, into the dining room. And I'm like, oh boy, that's something else.
Oh my
yeah.
God,
and yeah. Especially those grays, they're so smart.
Yeah, they're so smart.
It's really crazy.
Oh
yeah.
Oh my God.
Problem-solving skills, and it's, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. Like you had, like it, what I'm taking away from this is that you had a bird doing your homework in grad school.
You kidding me? Absolutely.
Right?
I had two birds.
Take
two birds.
Advantage.
All I wanted to do, Janet, was act. I don't have time for all this time for this theater history. What are we, I mean, you know.
Oh my God. Well, and so you had dogs, did you, and thank you for covering the Michigan part. Siblings?
Yeah, long story that would take about three podcasts.
Yeah,
I have eight brothers and sisters.
Amazing.
Lots and lots of halves.
Okay.
I'm adopted, so I grew up with one sibling. And then when I found my biological family, four there. And then on my mother's side, on my biological father's side, two. And then I 43 years, and I still have, well, let's say, okay, I've been talking about this for about 38 years.
Right.
37 years. In 37 years, I've not been able to figure out the most uncomplicated way to say this. My eighth sibling is a cousin from my adoptive family, not related to my biological family. So the man who raised me, his sister had two kids. And she gave one of her kids to my dad and my stepmother to raise. And so they were guardians of that kid. And then my dad passed away and my stepmother adopted the child. Mm-hmm. So she's technically my sister, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make
sense. Yeah. It's just,
I feel maybe you have gotten, maybe you've gotten further into
it. I may be further along than I thought I was.
Yeah.
So it's one of those situations where I have a very, very large extended family and then siblings I don't know. And who I've actually just in recent times been, I'm just kind of going to reach out one more time in my life now. I think it's time I can do this if I want to and find these other two siblings and see what, you know, where that goes. So we'll see. But it's eight. There's eight of us all told.
That's amazing.
And yeah. But I only grew up with one, the cousin, the adopted cousin and my brother. Who I grew up with.
And where's your brother fit into the age range?
Well, he's right under me. So my parents adopted me and then had a baby.
Mm-hmm. Which I was just saying that with someone else that I think I even podcast that like it seems like that happens a lot, right? That people
it
end
does
up,
it, a lot more now.
Oh
than
yeah,
when
Dave
I was
Holmes.
A kid.
That he I think he was his older siblings are adopted and then they ended up having him.
Yeah. Yeah, and our locations manager on Key & Peele, she's got two adopted brother and sister. You know, born to her parents, and these kids were adopted.
Yeah.
And my case is a little rare. You don't adopt first and then have, necessarily. But my parents, they knew they could have kids, so they were going to do that. The plan was to have four kids, two adopted kids and two biological kids. But anyway, he and I are 18 months apart, and we grew up together our whole lives. And then our cousin was adopted into our family 12 years ago, maybe? Yeah, around there.
God, immediately, and it's funny because I feel like I haven't had the conversation. I'm glad you brought up, don't pay any attention to me. I just realized I have to take my thyroid medication. I'm so sorry.
Gotta take your thyroid medication.
Guys, I'm on thyroid medication, if I haven't told you that already. it's keeping me alive.
She's in the midst of getting her pills. She's coming. She's getting her thyroid medication as we speak.
What's keeping me alive? Otherwise, I'm going to drop dead. That's not true.
That would be horrible yet eventful,
wouldn't it? you can tell everyone I got eaten by a coyote if you don't mind. So my immediate question, and I'm sorry if you've had to answer this a bunch, but unfortunately, this is kind of the nature of this podcast. Is in that time frame, obviously, how open were your parents at how young of an age about the fact that you were adopted?
Oh, my parents are social workers. Mm-hmm. So as soon as they thought I could comprehend mm-hmm. it in some degree, mm-hmm. we started to deal with it. So three, mm-hmm. they told me when I was three, mm-hmm. and then told me again, I was five and then six and then seven. And, you know, you go out and buy a book, you know, why was I adopted? Right. These books. And so this has never been a grand secret in the life of my family. This has always been a very open thing in mm-hmm. my family.
Was it something that you, because it wasn't a secret, because it isn't this thing that becomes this mystery that must mm-hmm. be solved mm-hmm. or, does that come along with it, a sense of casualness about it for you as a child that you eventually would find your family, or maybe you wouldn't, or maybe you didn't care for a while and then you did? Like, what was that all about?
I think it kind of went in and out of my life more than anything else. I think that my mother did not push. She said, I know who to contact if this is something he wants to do, but I'm not going to push him. And so she didn't. And then when I was 18, I wanted to do it. And so we got some non-identifiable information about my biological mother. And then when I was 25, there was a law passed in Michigan that allowed a person known as a confidential intermediary mm-hmm. to look for your parents. And they have carte blanche to all the files from the time that you were born, where you were born, the hospital. Then it ends up being so much easier situation to deal with. Mm-hmm. And this is the 90s as opposed to the 70s, where things had changed enough, quite a lot, actually. Not enough, quite a lot. And so it had been something that had been in my mind, because I think there may be, without me being able to articulate it at this moment, some kind of biological imperative where you want to know where you come from. Mm-hmm. It's important to people, I think, adoptees.
That's what I wonder. Yeah. I mean, I'm fascinated because I feel like, I mean, I can only speak as somebody who, I couldn't feel more opposite of an adopted child, in the sense that I look exactly like, if you put a picture of my dad over a picture of my mom and mm-hmm. put them together,
and
I look
50%
this, 50% that.
Yeah.
I feel like most of my mannerisms, likes and dislikes, like, I feel so much a product of those two people.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't grow up with them together at all.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
so I was also able to see, like, oh, I see a hint of my mom in this, which is so different than my dad, because they're so different. It just felt like there was, like, you could spotlight these different traits and qualities.
Sure.
And so I'm so interested in what it would have been like to be a person experiencing only one of two, not nature and nurture, but sort of just seeing nurture separated from nature, and not, and kind of wondering what your identity, like how it does tie to your identity, and whether you felt like, oh, I wonder if this is something that's, you know, this thing about me mm-hmm. is connected to my family, my genetic family, versus this thing about me that I developed through the relationship I have with my parents. Do you know?
You don't think about it as a child.
I guess that's a pretty complicated.
I mean, yeah, it's yeah. For a child. I mean, it's something that your children, your parents are spending so much time trying to drill into your head. We picked you because you're special. We picked you because you're special. We picked you because you're special. And you get to a point, and it's usually in your formative years, 12 to 15, around in there, where I think you do start to wonder those things. What? Now, do I have a natural sense of humor? Am I gregarious because my parents taught me to be nice to other people, or am I gregarious because it's in my genes? You know, you start to wonder those things, and you don't have any resources to give you an answer. So yeah, that becomes a very important part of some people's lives. I think it's horrible when people don't tell their children they're adopted. There are people who don't tell their children they're adopted, which blows my mind. But I look, I get it. We're afraid of what we don't know, and so we don't. So you just, I don't know what that is. I'm going to ignore that. I'm not going to put any energy into that. I'm just going to do what I can do as a parent.
Right. As soon as he came into our lives, he became our child, and
yes.
Everything before that doesn't matter. Well,
not to you,
right?
But there is, like I said, I think a moral imperative that has to be dealt with and has to be confronted. And I said moral imperative, a biological imperative, so for me, there. You know, I'm very fortunate that those questions were answered for me. I mean, to be standing in a place with your biological mother and your adoptive mother, to be able to stand in between these two women, and one of the women look at the other woman and say, yep, well, he certainly didn't get that from me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It brings you a certain type of wholeness in your life that if you're not adopted, you can't have an understanding of.
Right.
But I think a lot of people don't know that that's a thing they can pursue, or don't want to pursue it, or have convinced themselves, I don't need to pursue it. I shouldn't say that. That's pejorative. I don't mean that they're missing something. I'm just saying, look, if they don't want to know, they don't have to know. I have another friend who's adopted who has no interest in finding his biological parents whatsoever. He has in so much – he's told me in so much that he's used the actual words, if I ever met my biological mother, I'd kick her in the head. Mm. Now, that's because his parents –
right.
He doesn't have a lot of respect for his mother. His father's a very distant, cold man who's all business. And he goes, I don't like my life emotionally. And if you hadn't given me up for adoption, I wouldn't have to deal with this.
Right.
So I get it. I get that.
Yeah.
I get that. And, you know, my life has been, my parents have done, all they did was try to be selfless and try to help me as best they can. And so everything turned out great. So that's easy for me. So it turned out great.
Did you ever lean on that as sort of in a crisis? Did you ever as a hormonal teenage boy? Did you ever like have those moments with your parents where that entered into the equation or an argument in a way that it wouldn't with a biological son or daughter?
That's come into conversation.
You've used what you have.
Yeah. I've used that excuse 2 years ago. In my marriage, I used that excuse. You don't understand. I'm a doctor. Like, what am I? I'm a 43-year-old man. What the hell is going on right now? You can't use that excuse. You've known your biological mother for 17 years. You can't use this excuse. And so, it's really, it, being able to have an experience with my mother, like walking the day I met my mother at Dallas Love Field and Dallas, Texas. I was leaving the airport or walking out like down out of the terminal of the airport with, and my girlfriend lived in Fort Worth, Texas at the time. So she came with my mother, which had been interesting for them to meet there. You know what I mean? And
yeah, no kidding. Wow.
Crazy. And we're walking through the airport and I don't know what I expected. Like I expected there'd be a ticker tape parade for me or something like that. Where's Oprah? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And my mother was just standing next to me, and she's just as intense as I am. And we're walking down the street, and she just kept grabbing my shoulders and going, "You're so stinking handsome," and which was very sweet of her to say. And then I can't now. I'm doing this for the podcast, but only you can see this. So I don't do this a lot. Like with people's noses itch. I self itch. So mm-hmm. I go like this. I wiggle my nose.
Uh-huh.
My nose itched, and I wiggled my nose like this. And then my mom slaps me on the arm, scared the shit out of me, slaps me on the arm, and she goes, "Your Uncle Michael does that." You know? So it's such a peculiar thing.
Yeah.
It has to be genetic. Yeah. It can't. That's not a learned behavior.
Yeah.
Nobody in my family does that.
God, I think that's so – it's so interesting because even just the excitement of that is,
oh, yeah.
It's interesting because I feel like I have a little bit of that now in my life with my mom's sisters because I didn't grow up really knowing them.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I'm a little more connected to them as I get older, it starts to feel more important. Like things that I remember rolling my eyes at when I was in my 20s, like, I'm not going to care about that. You know, they're fine. But, and now things about like my aunt's cadence or things that sound or seem so much like my mom, I get this tiny little thrill out of like, God, they are such siblings because I'm an only child.
Sure.
And so I can only imagine the sort of discoveries and the moments and that feeling of connectiveness that almost is like a high, but in a great way.
Oh, definitely.
Just because it's exciting and it's so new and it's so new, but it's so old. Do you know what I mean? It's like connecting with newness with oldness in a spark.
Oh, yeah. It's very... Well, it's all very anthropological, isn't it? And that's a fascinating thing. And you just get to finally, well, it takes a long time, but you eventually get to a place where you get to take things for granted that everybody else takes for granted. And it's funny, my mother said to me one time, maybe I'd known my family for 5 years or 6 years or something, and I got a Christmas card from my grandparents that didn't have money in it.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom said, now you're part of the family because now the rules apply to you like they do to all the rest of... My mom was the oldest of seven.
Uh-huh.
And of the seven, six of them had children. And so she said, all of my children and all of your cousins, you know, there was like a cutoff age, which I believe was 18. And of course, you came into our lives at 25. So I think they just kind of did it for a couple of years. And she goes, but now you're part of the family. You don't get any money or gifts either. You know what I mean?
Wonderful.
You know what I mean? So you now the rules apply to you the way they apply to everybody else.
Yeah.
And So yeah, it was a high. I can't even, that's a perfect way of describing it. I'm trying to think of more flowery language, but there's no need for it. But you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what were you like? I mean, obviously before all of this happened, when you were still in high school and you were just kind of the adolescent teenage boy in Michigan who was adopted, what were you like? What were you into? Were you into theater really early? Did you get the bug?
In high school, I did. My career, I owe my career. this is an interesting kind of, you know, spiritual concept. It's a biblical concept, which is that, you know, all things, God makes all things turn to the good. I'm paraphrasing scripture right now, but it's something to that effect. That's the nature of the scripture, mm-hmm. This sacred scripture. And the whole thing, it's so my parents, the therapist, the family therapist that we were seeing during my parents' divorce, is responsible. This man is responsible for me sitting here talking to you right now, because I only knew how to express myself in a physical way to him.
And how old were you?
12.
Okay.
12. Mm-hmm. Yep. And he pulled my parents aside and said to them, I know that he's going to be going to Shrine of the Little Flower High School, Shrine High in Royal Oak. And, so for all of the Michiganders who are listening, mm-hmm. they'll know what I'm talking about.
I got him. Yeah.
I know that he's going to this high school. A very dear friend of mine is the choir teacher there and does the plays there, directs the plays there. And I really think we should get him involved. And if it's okay with you guys, I'm going to tell her about him. Because I feel because of what's going on in his life and him being adopted, he will not voluntarily come out of his shell. It could take another 15 years. And so, you know, let's just shepherd him in a direction if we can. So he told her, she's not a nudger. She's a grabber. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? And I remember, you know, being a freshman and walking through the halls, and then here comes Miss Rashid and just runs up to me and says, yeah, you're the key kid, right? You're Fred Olds? Okay. Well, we're going to get you. We got to get you in the thing here, okay? And I was like, you'll run lights or something. And then ran away. And then that was all there was to that. And so I was running lights.
It's so amazing to have line back to that person.
Yeah. To be able to look. The journeys are important to me because of my mother's journey to the point where she gave birth to me. My parents' journey who adopted. Because history is important. I can't speak for all adoptees. But I would imagine if I were to do a study, history is important to a lot of adoptees.
I'm sure.
You look at your history and go, well, yeah, that's the thing that grandpa did and grandma did that. But there's a lost ghost history next to our history. And so I think I can't be the only one who yearns to know what that history
is. I'm sure not.
So I know that it's a pain in the heart of my best friend from college. She's also adopted. And that's an effective thing. It's a really important thing in her life. So at any rate, that was how that started for me in school. And I found a group of friends, and I always become the most, you know, the most kind of vocal and loquacious person in that group of friends. And, you know, the whole thing, holding court at the cafeteria and all that stuff, everything you'd think, all that kind of traditional, not necessarily class clown, but because of how I was raised to share my feelings about things. Mm-hmm. I wasn't raised to be cool, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's, all of that, everything you think about me, part and parcel, is probably true. I was that guy. And so, and I realized once I realized that if I wanted to be a veterinarian, it was going to require a lot of math. I'm like, mm-hmm. gone out. Nope, not doing the animal doctor thing. Can't do that.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was, and it's harder, apparently harder. You know that for veterinarians, it's apparently their work is harder. Than with humans, especially if you're like a GP, because then you're dealing with like lizards and raptors and cats.
Yeah, I can't imagine that. That's eels. Such different. I mean, we're talking about entirely different
anatomy.
Species, different anatomy. Yeah,
so,
I bet.
Yeah, so that's kind of. Yeah, that's. I answered that question, right? Yeah.
Were you in student council?
No, I didn't. That was it. Like, I didn't do like Model UN or student council or anything like that. I didn't want to run in that way. That was not my thing. I was kind of, but I'm the, you know, this is, you know, I'm talking about myself, but I'm the guy that goes and sits. I was the guy that went and sat in the booth with the person that no one's talking to, because I had a horrible childhood. So once I got into high school, by my peers, not my parents.
Right.
My parents and my parents' friends, they were all psychologists and social workers and psychiatric nurses. Yeah.
So you were probably really comfortable around adults at a very young age.
Super comfortable around adults.
Those are very inclusive adults, and a lot of them are adults who choose to treat children like little people instead of children.
Right, right, exactly. Way. Yeah, yeah, yeah. In a very, I thought, personally a responsible way. Mm-hmm, you know, yeah. Not just go do what you want.
Yeah.
Your brain is still forming in your head, so we're not going to just let you make any decision you want. But so it was that kind of situation. And I had a hard time. Ages kind of 10 through 14 was rough because I grew up in a city in a very urban area where a lot of children are not taught to express their feelings and not taught to be vulnerable. And it was rough, you know what I mean? And so by the time I got to – when I got to high school, I'm the only person in my life I know who enjoyed high school. I don't know anybody who enjoyed high school. Mm-hmm. I fucking loved high school. I loved almost every minute of it. And even when I look back now, I look back at it, on it with relish. Like all the heartbreak and the anxiety and asking this girl out and trying to make the track team, all of that – somehow, in a way, lots of people look to me as a leader, but I find myself to be a very, very good follower. My definition of wisdom is that you learn something from another person by learning it from them. You don't go experience it.
Right.
You actually learn something from another person, which requires a certain lack of ego.
Correct.
Do you know what I mean?
Correct.
So then you have to be able to say, and then other times, and also that's also nature. Some people are just built a different way. They're like, nah, I'll be the judge of whether or not heroin's bad. I can 100% tell you that heroin's bad.
Yeah.
You know, no, I got it.
Yeah.
There are just people like that.
Yeah.
So my mother told me, you know, this is what's going to happen and life's going to get better. And this is scary here and this is going to get easier. And my dad, you know, so I just believed them. They had been right about everything else. They saved my life. So why wouldn't I believe them?
Yeah.
See, I didn't harbor that kind of resentment toward my parents that a lot of kids do, because that's natural for you to do it because your brain ain't done cooking.
Right.
So you're crazy when you're a teenager. Like, you're literally, your brain is not done working. It doesn't work right yet. And so I had I relished just about every moment of it. I really, 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 really enjoyed high school.
Well, it's so amazing to – I mean, that's the kind of the joyful thing about – and I think for people who are, you know, in the age group where, you know, I told you I get these amazing emails from younger people who are still in high school or people who are just coming into college, but also adults and people who are parents who are kind of looking to understand their kids differently or better, or like recalling this time period sort of helps connect them with what their kid might be going through or whatever. But I feel like – that there's this wonderful nugget in there within what you're saying, which is that in that particular circumstance, that was the tough age that you were in, and then you had this transformative experience where you could be seen and see yourself in a different, through a different lens, you know, to be given that opportunity. And like, I think I need to be reminded of that if I'm ever, you know, because our lives continue on, and although our brains finish cooking to a certain degree, you know, we have this amazing, the gift of never having to be stuck in who we are or our choices or whatever.
Right.
And to feel like you can be in a situation where you feel like you're being defined by an environment, and that can feel like crippling. And to know that you still have that same kind of opportunity, if you take it, if you grab it, if you are brave and leap for it, that you can leave your job where you feel like shit.
Yeah.
And understand yourself through in a different way, through a different experience, you know?
If you can, my best friend's has five kids, and his oldest is a freshman in high school, and she's going to a high school that's different from a different set of friends. So there's not a bunch of friends that are at this high school. And we just all, now remember, this is a young lady, all of her, when her father and her father's best friend see each other, they hug each other and they kiss each other on the mouth. I'm talking about me and my best friend.
Right.
So she's grown up seeing men share affection, straight men share affection with each other.
Right.
She's grown up watching women stand up for themselves and be, you know what I mean? She's very fortunate in that regard, that she lives in a world where she's seen us express ourselves and love to be together. And so I hope that she believes us when we tell her, it's going to be fine. As long as you are your genuine you, it's going to be fine. Please don't think this is lip service.
Right.
Like, it's really going to work. You're going to, because what I'll find is you'll find that you're acutely aware, you're acutely equipped to communicate on a really meaningful level with like six people. You only need two friends in your whole life. Yourself and one other friend. I'm a big believer in having friends. You don't need a ton of friends. Now, I'm a hypocrite because I'm a friend collector, but you will, if you are your own authentic self, you'll find other people who fall into a category that you fall into that's just very uniquely you mm-hmm. and them. Mm-hmm. And then that's those kind of friendships you keep forever. Like, I have two or three friends from high school who I've known for 30 years because we share such a similar and, like I said, unique worldview. And so why would you not be friends with those people? It's just so painful to try, and it requires so much energy to try to fit in
mm-hmm.
to another mold
mm-hmm.
that doesn't fit you. You know what I mean? It's really, I just, why give yourself an ulcer? You know what I mean? You know what I mean? It's not easy for me to say. I'm not 14 anymore, but I try to remember what it's like to be 14. You know what I mean? It just, sometimes you feel like you're just going to burst out of your bloody skin.
Yeah.
Because it's just so crazy. Why is everything, and because you're just growing too, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if this works as much for teenagers, but sometimes I think you have to kind of live by a different, there's a different rule. God, I wish I could remember this guy's name. It's an Indian guy who's in politics and talks about, in India, and talks about things like soft power. Do you know what soft power is?
I don't know.
Soft power is, if I may be so grandiose, soft power is the thing that made the Berlin Wall fall. We did not attack Russia with nukes. We did not invade Russia. What we did was we had rock and roll and blue jeans.
Mm.
And so the Soviet Union, it was tenuous. It was never going to last.
Mm.
But they've got freedom and blue jeans and rock and roll. I really, really want, this is not working. It rotted from the inside out. We didn't have to do anything. America didn't have to do anything but be happy. Do you know what I'm saying?
I absolutely.
That's soft power. Yeah. And so India is a country that utilizes soft power now. Soft power is a cultural phenomenon that takes place across the world. So certain parts of the world want to be like other parts of the world. And soft power is one of these interesting concepts that sits on top of things that can kind of look down at things a little bit. And so this guy was saying, in India, we do things a certain way. And the reason we do that is because we all realized there are Hindus, and there are Catholics, and there are Buddhists, and there are people all across this country, and we have a lot of problems, yes. But what we've done in India is we've decided not to simply disagree, but to agree in the way that we will disagree.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a structure, that's a thing that has profound structure mm-hmm. to it, that we will agree on how we're going to disagree. Because everyone knows we're going
to
disagree.
Well, yeah, and there's an implicit and inherent respect to that.
Exactly.
That is like
exactly.
sorely lacking in a lot of disagreements
and it's
in
hard,
environments.
It's hard for kids to kind of grasp that concept, but if you can tell a kid, if you can teach a kid to look at a thing from a different angle, like understand, young person, that you're growing. And what that means is your brain, your synapses aren't firing the way they're going to fire when you're 26. If you can even just comprehend that, it's like when I don't eat, it's not that everybody I see is an idiot. It's that there's a biological thing happening in my body.
Yes.
Oh, I haven't eaten. That's why I think everyone's an idiot.
Yes.
It's so much is not true. Everybody else in high school is also scared to death. It's just that you learned to deal with that fear in a different way than your colleague learned how to deal with that fear.
Right.
And I feel like if we can teach kids that, there's something manageable about the world in that way. You go, oh, that's why I have to keep remembering I'm growing.
Yeah,
I'm still growing. Or that when you feel things happening to your body and you see a girl who you think's pretty or you see a boy that you like, that you're like, oh, I don't want to take romance out of the world or magic out of the world, but it's helpful sometimes to go, so these two neurological things happen to my brain, and that's why my body's feeling like this. I'm not actually in love. I'm not going to die
right.
if that person doesn't like me. if you'll allow yourself to just accept the fact that there's this other thing happening, there's a biological chemical thing happening. Right. You're still going to throw tantrums. You're still going to think your parents are idiots, but it might be a little bit of salve for the wound of growing up.
Yeah, I agree with you. I definitely think that I think that's brilliant. And I think that there is. I think that you just nailed it, which is you're still going to feel those things. Trust me.
You're going to feel
them. You're not going to turn into like a science robot who, right. you know, does suddenly loses the ability to feel your heart skip a beat when you see someone.
Yeah.
You're going to have all those feelings. But if it's just this tiny little piece, like the Jiminy Cricket on your shoulder.
Exactly.
Who's like,
yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Feel, you know what? Feel all of it. Feel it. Experience it. Feel it. Somewhere in there, know that. There's a lot of reasons this is happening.
There's
That's
a
all
lot
I'm saying.
Of re- yes. I'm just saying that yes.
A lot
just
of reasons this is happening.
Yeah. Just know that it's happening for reasons that you just let that happen. Just please have that info be in a young person's head.
Sure.
For a second, you know what I mean.
Sure.
And there are going to be those moments too, late at night. Mommy, I'm sorry. Daddy, I'm sorry. Where you're weeping, and my hope is that parents will say, "Hey, babe, you're growing. You're growing." And this is part and parcel of how this works.
Right.
This is how this works. And so, because you don't. I mean, I can remember moments when I was 16. I'm like, it's never going to get better. And it's only gotten better. If there are young people listening to these podcasts, here's my thing. The people I pray for, the people I'm really concerned about, and I'm... are the super popular kids where nothing goes wrong in school. That's
they're
the
not
scary
learning
part.
Empathy. They're not learning humility. Nope. They're not learning.
It's rough.
Yeah.
And it's going to be really rough when you become an adult. I have a family member. I'm going to keep this as general as I can and anonymous as I can. There's a family member who lived with me and my wife. And this family member and my wife had some issues because this family member was not abiding by the rules in our home. And then this family member, after a 5-month tenure living in our home, got a job. And then a couple months after getting that job, this family member decided to move back up north to be with their family. Whoop, almost gave the sex to the family member.
Nope, didn't pick up on it.
Didn't slip.
Nope, you did it. Yeah.
And that family member has a parent who has seen their child in distress and, in my personal opinion, dealt with the situation in the wrong way, which was to say, well, my child has a dream, so now I'm going to throw money at the dream and make the dream come true here. So that way my child doesn't feel pain. What you've done is ostensibly masked any life experience that your child could have gleaned from this situation. So, and I read an article about this in a magazine recently. Cool kids in school. Oh my God, it's so horrible because you get 4 good years and then you're going to live for like 60 or 70 more years and it's just going to be tougher for you than it is for people who struggle and learn how to get out of a struggle.
Absolutely.
And if you don't learn how to get out of a struggle, that's tough. It's I'm very, you know, when I used to teach improv, you know, when I more readily, it was always interesting because this is a horrible prejudice that I have. I always used to do this like game, play this game for myself where I tried to not play the game and I'm like, don't do the game when the students come in for the first day and the students come in for the first day. And if I may be so bold, Janet, if I saw a girl that looked like you in my class, I'm going, oh boy.
Ah!
This girl is not going to be able to handle these concepts.
Oh.
Because if a girl's pretty, you don't need to learn. Lots of pretty women are super smart, but they never exercise their minds because they don't have to. Because they don't have to. That's the worst. The worst thing in the world is being born a pretty baby, then being a cute child, then being a gorgeous teenager, and then being a really good-looking person into your 30s. What are you supposed to do when you turn 50? If everything you've ever done in your life has just gotten by on your looks, that's tough. I don't know how one rectifies that situation, but that's an issue.
Right.
That's an issue. You know, look, I don't want anybody to go through anything they don't want to go through, but we have to go through life. We just have to do it. And so it's funny. That's my feeling. That's my feeling about people who, you know, you've got charm and you just kind of, and everything kind of goes your way. How do you handle a crisis?
Right. I know. I really agree with that. And I've said it many times, but I just feel like, if you can, and for those of you who do write me and say, you know, I am going through a rough patch, this, you know, and for people who are able to celebrate not being in a rough patch and having been in one, that we all sort of can understand that you really do benefit from it, as
you
hard as it
struggle.
Seems and as impossible as that seems. You absolutely do. And I would not change anything. That
nothing.
I went through, and I went through a lot.
Change
and I wouldn't
change anything.
It.
And you know, my mother had a cartoon on her refrigerator for years and years and years, and just a person standing at a blackboard. For those of you who are young, a blackboard is a thing, right? but it's a blackboard that had two columns. And in one of the columns, there's four marks and a tick mark, you know, five, which indicates five. It's four. And then on the other side is just a column replete with tick marks. Just five, 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 all over it. And then above, the headings above it say successes, four. And then learning experiences.
Mm.
And it's just filled. It's probably, you know, 120. And that's what it is. So if you can look at life that way, you're going to win.
Right.
You win. So you it's just how you frame your existence.
Absolutely.
To me, it makes life easier to frame my existence as learning experiences and successes. Because once... only you can give an experience in your life power to be a failure, as opposed to the power of it being a learning experience.
Absolutely. And also, like, I think that the sort of end game of that conversation is that it is all part of the same board, and that it's almost like successes in a way is the overarching. Because if it's a learning experience, then that
it's still
in and
a success.
Of itself is a
is
success.
A success. That in and of itself is a success. Yeah. That's true. That's a very
it's
good way of
like
putting it.
You need three columns. Like, maybe you have some abject failures. Maybe you have as many. Maybe you have four in the abject failures. All the
these
learning experiences.
Learning
in the
experiences.
Middle,
yeah.
And then like four. Like, hey, you know what? That really just kind of
that just kind of
came
to
together.
Me. It came together. Really. Yeah. 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 In the most facile way.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And so yeah. So.
We got to get in touch with this person. I don't know what we got to divide that into thirds. This is a problem.
If you're a cartoonist,
I have really called this out. Yeah. It's a problem.
Well, you've thrown on the gauntlet. We got to
really
find this cartoonist.
I really have.
We got to make sure this cartoonist hears this podcast.
I can only listen.
We're going to find this guy.
I would say 99% of my listeners are cartoonists.
Okay.
So it's who like talking about dogs and tapeworms.
Yes.
I am going to, guys, I'm going to keep this short and sweet because Keegan and I both have somewhere that we have to be, and I want to do this MASH game really quickly.
The SMASH game.
It's MASH, Mansion, Apartment, Shack, House. It is a game of a child. But it is how I end each podcast.
The MASH game.
So all you need to know at this point is that I'm going to ask you for three things that you just like off the top of your head, super improv. I'll give you different categories. You give me three things in each category, and then I will tell you which of them you end up with. It's a whole thing.
It's a whole thing. I hear you.
But I'm going to start
excited.
With
I'm excited.
This. I'm going to ask you for three places that you have a vacation home. Your ideal fantasy vacation home.
Mm.
Three places.
Norway.
Ooh, I'm about to go there.
Hawaii.
We'll talk about that offline. Hawaii.
And then like I don't know why I can't. Sri Lanka.
Ooh. Okay, wonderful. Okay. Three singer-songwriters / bands, anything like that, that you can, that basically create like a soundtrack to your life. Do you know what I mean? Like you're driving,
mm-hmm.
maybe you're on one of those family drives where you're headed out to the beach. Like music, whether it exists or it would be completely like created new for you.
Mm-hmm.
What's Keegan's soundtrack? Like three.
Well, an all blues Jimi Hendrix album.
Great.
And then, believe it or not, the Eagles.
All right, love it.
So it's just really good road music.
Yeah, sure, sure. And
I don't know if you know who this guy is, but I love this guy. Is it Matthew? Michael Kiwanuka is his name.
Oh, no, I don't.
You know Michael Kiwanuka?
No.
He's terrific.
I got to check that out.
He's great.
Okay, I got him. I got him.
He's a soundtrack of a life kind of guy.
Yeah. That's what I like to hear, because mm-hmm. anything like that, I feel like music is so important to me, and the way that it sort of has informed and supported my experience of being alive.
Oh, no,
I'm one
no,
of those people.
I'm with you. And only recently has music become kind of super important in my life again. It hasn't for quite some time, and it is again.
It's back, baby.
It's back.
All right. Three foods you can eat at any time. Could be as specific or as general as you want. No physical ramifications. It's just pure joy. It could be a cupcake that you had once at a blah, blah, blah. Mm. It could be like your mom's something that she made that you can't, you know, but at the drop of a hat, snap of a finger, there it is whenever you want it back.
I ate some lamb dish, like lamb and beef dish in Greece when I was 19. And it had a name, like it was called The Fool's Errand or something like that.
Oh, my.
And my friend, and I was like, this is like the best thing I've ever had in my life. And I'd never at that point in my life tasted anything like that. So that would be one of them. Another one would be chili cheese fries, which is something that I eat when I go home at a Coney Island restaurant in Detroit.
Wonderful.
And then it would be like, I got to pick one. So I would say like... You know, like not like a small piece of key lime pie, like a really my mouth started to water right as I said that. Like a big, thick piece of key lime pie. Great. Not key lime custard, I mean like key lime pie.
Got it and love it. Three movies that you can jump into. It's real life. You're not acting in them. But at no danger to yourself, no physical threat.
Mm-hmm.
You can just dive in and sort of be in that world. Three.
The first Indiana Jones movie. So what's that? Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Heavens yes.
I would love to be in. I mean, if I didn't have to be super cold, because I don't like the cold, but I'd still like to be in a movie like. Did you ever see The Thing? John Carpenter's
yes,
The Thing?
Yes, I saw.
And Kurt Russell, you know?
Oh, yeah. Like, they just showed it at the Arclight on the big screen.
Oh, did they really?
I've never seen it on the big screen.
Seen it on the big screen.
Yeah, it's so scary.
I'd love to be in a movie like that where there's just snow and like glaciers.
You know what I
want to
give you? Never Cry Wolf.
Oh, my God. Never Cry Wolf is a better example.
Right?
That's the one. I love that movie. That movie. Like waking up and he's naked and it's the tundra, but it's warm enough for him to be naked and the caribou are running around him. Ridiculous. And then the third one would be what is that? Where is that place where the why is this not coming to me in my mind right now? It's a thing I gotta work on.
Is there anything you can give me that I can talk you through it?
Like, it's funny that I mentioned Indiana Jones. Like, I've always wanted to be, a perfect example, because I love the world, is just to be like in a Bourne movie. But that's the Indiana Jones thing. You get to travel around.
Right.
Like, who doesn't want to go to Nepal? Doesn't everybody want to go to Nepal? And be in a rainforest in the same movie, you know?
Yes.
You know what? What's the Terrence Malick movie with Richard Gere? Just there's something so warm about it. It has the same feel as like living in a farmhouse, like in Field of Dreams, like that.
Mm-hmm.
It has that same feeling. What is the name of the dang movie?
I don't know. We can look it up though.
1979. Richard Gere, Terrence Malick directed it.
Getting into it right now.
If my director Peter was here, he'd know just like that, because he loves Terrence Malick.
Oh, Peter. And I, by the way, love Peter Atencio. Here we go.
Tree
of Life, To the Wonder, Thin Red Line, Days of Heaven, Bad Line. Days of Heaven?
Is that with Richard Gere?
New World, Knight of Cups, Ten of More. Well, that's a 78.
That's probably it.
I'm pulling it up. Days of Heaven. Days of Heaven. Richard Gere. Yep. Days of Heaven.
That's it.
I've never seen it.
And it's just like warm and wheat fields and farmhouses. Like to be in a movie like that.
Love it.
In the heartland.
You may.
Oh, yes.
You may not. Mm-hmm. Okay. Three. what do I want to do for you? Three. Okay. You are in, I'm really going to stretch your improv muscles. You have written and are starring in a new musical, Three. What is that musical about?
Three
different ones.
Oh.
You only end up with one.
What is the musical about?
Mm-hmm.
One of the musicals would be about a man who is walking down the street by himself, like at nighttime in a downtown someplace area, and there's like a pack of dogs. Oh. And the pack of dogs come and they run at him and they're being extremely aggressive. And then he just kneels down on the ground and he just starts breathing very deeply. And they all kind of sit around him. But like they're attacking him. Like they're attacking him.
Right.
But then they stop attacking him because he just has this like energy, this gentle energy coming off him. And then it's like he has to take care of the dogs and he runs with the dogs in the pack, but it's in the city.
Oh my God. I love it.
And
I see this.
And it's like he's the man dog.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or the dog man. Maybe it's
beautiful.
Cause that's what musicals dog should be man. Called. It's always there something man, the elephant man, the dog man,
the dog man. Love
that
it.
That was an image that came to me in a dream one day. And I'm like, I don't know where I would put that in a movie, but I'd love to have that in a movie where they'd like be mouthing him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just doing what dogs do. But then he,
you know what he uses? Soft power.
He uses soft power. That's exactly what he does. Yeah. He goes, why would you eat me when you could eat these?
Yeah.
You know? Right. And the reason that... anyway, okay, so that's what that would be.
Okay.
Then another one would be... I would write a musical about the people... I would write a musical about furriers and tradesmen and Native Americans. And it would be called... The movie would be called The Strait. T-H-E-S-T-R-A-I-T. And then underneath it in parentheses, it would say Les Détroits. Because that's what Detroit means. Detroit means the Strait.
That's great.
So it'd be like a historical piece about Detroit. There already is a musical called Detroit Be Damned.
Uh-huh.
That is about that friends of mine wrote. That's about the history of Detroit.
Oh my God.
It's a fascinating city, and Detroit being damned, meaning that the Detroit River got, you know, they were like little beaver dams because there was beaver pelts. Beaver pelts would come to, anyway. That's a history lesson.
Oh my
anyway.
God! But
so I'd write a music about the history of Detroit.
You know, I love
like,
it
from like 1701 to like 1820.
Love it.
And then I would want to do a musical about, like, I would love to be, because I probably wouldn't be cast in this right now, but something that would be kind of August Osage County-like,
mm-hmm.
something like in Appalachia, you know what I mean?
Love.
Where people have territory and they live in the hollers, and, you know, it would be like a redneck Macbeth. That would be that would be that kind of musical, you know?
Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. God, what great answers. Jesus Christ. Okay. All right. Next category is going to be you wake up tomorrow and Matrix style, your brain has essentially downloaded three skills, or in this case, it will be one, but three skills that you wake up tomorrow and you're just incredibly skilled at that would normally take tons and tons of time.
One skill?
But or like three, because you'll end up with one.
Oh, because you end up with, I see. Oh, first of all, Wing Chun. Wing Chun. I would want to be a Wing Chun master.
Great.
Then I would want to be, I would want to, God, if I could just wake up tomorrow mm-hmm. and just know like Castilian Spanish.
Beautiful.
That would be really
the
great.
Romance languages.
Yeah. Like that would be, great. Can I make that like a multi-answer? Like if I could just be multilingual.
Sure. Absolutely.
Tomorrow.
Absolutely.
That would be the best thing ever.
Me too. Me too. Me too.
And then the other thing is I would love to be able to, like, I'd love to be able to wake up tomorrow and be able to frame a house.
Yes.
Like, I don't know how to do any of that stuff.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, I'm not handy like that. And my brother-in-law built the deck in the back of my house, and he frames houses for a living.
And
to me,
it's satisfying on such a different level.
It seems so extraordinary to be able to frame a house.
Yeah, I totally agree. Beautiful, beautiful. All right. You could decide not to answer this if you don't want to, but one of the key notes of MASH in back in the day, this is just all spinning off of like in the day We used to play MASH. It used to be like, what kind of car would you drive? How many kids would you have?
Yeah.
What, da, da, da.
Yeah.
One of them, essential carryovers, can be someone, it can be three people that you had a crush on when you were a teenager, or just people that you have some sort of, even it's like a talent crush, but it's sort of the crush category of three people that you sort of have a crush on.
In high school, there was a girl in high school that I never got to date that I had a crush on, and her name is Mariela Gomez, and I don't know so much as much about how kind she was as anything else. You know what I mean? That's kind of it for me. Like I love beauty, but it's like I can look at a human being and appreciate their symmetry.
Oh, you know what? I was even going to say this could expand out too to like a character in a film or a book.
Oh,
like
sure.
It's not the actor, the essence of, for me, almost any Emma Thompson character.
You just
get that sort of like, oh, the richness of that person. I want to spend time with this person.
I have that for you.
Should I put Mariela on here?
Yeah, because it's kind of an archetypal thing about people that I, you know.
Yep. I'm
trying to think, because this is, I mean, I love, oh God. I just saw Get On Up the other day.
I haven't seen it yet.
And I had the good fortune at the Emmys to meet Viola Davis.
Oh. Amazing.
That woman.
Yeah.
She destroys me.
Yeah.
Like destroys me in the best way. And I said that to my friend. We saw the movie. My friend, she then said to me, she said, that woman wrecks me. We were coming to each other at the same time to say the exact same thing to each other.
Yeah.
And another character that I just, I'm trying to think, the person that came to my mind right now. No, that's not true. I'm saying that. No, that's not what it is. I'm trying to think who really gets me. Well, I loved, I'm going to think of something that's more perfect later, but
that's how this game always goes.
Yeah.
That's improv, baby.
Because I'm thinking about things that I know would sound good and are partially true.
Right, right, right.
You know, like Chauncey Gardner from Being There.
Right.
Or the priest that Robert De Niro plays in The Mission.
Mission. Talk about getting wrecked.
But it's not those. It's, who did I see the other day? Oh my God. Oh my God. I don't know if you've watched this. This is what's getting me right now. I don't know if you've watched this movie called The Honorable Woman, this television show called The Honorable Woman.
Oh, is that the Maggie Gyllenhaal? I haven't seen it yet. Oh no. Do I need to see it? Is it going to completely destroy me?
I need to stop this interview so you can.
Oh my God. Okay. All
Maggie
right. Well,
Gyllenhaal as Nessa. Her character's name is Nessa Stein. Oh.
Amazing.
My God. I've just never seen her so good.
Oh God, okay.
I like Maggie Gyllenhaal a lot.
Yeah.
But she is transcendent in this.
Oh my God.
Just transcendent.
Okay.
And then, you know what? I'm going to take Mariela off there.
Okay.
I have a friend, his name is Ryan Carlson, and he is one of the top three actors I've ever seen in my life. And he's a dear, dear friend. And as I'm speaking to you, my heart hurts that I can't be with him right now. Between him and my best friend, Larry, it's as close as I can talk about being in love with a person that I'm platonically.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? Like, he hurts me. I love him so much.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And part of it's his talent, but part of it is just, I adore him.
And
I just
like,
adore him.
How lucky to get to feel that about someone.
Oh,
and to me, this is a whole other podcast episode, but I feel like one of the benefits of aging and whatever wisdom, you know, enough to know the unwise or whatever, but is kind of coming closer, I think, every day to the understanding that like the gift of loving someone is truly just being able to have that feeling. It's not even getting it back. It's just the gift of like that intimacy and that feeling of like, I'm so lucky that I love someone this much.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. 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 I really, there are times too when I, there's sometimes, there are times when I just this is a different experience because you spend, you know, I've been married 16 years. So you spend a amount of time with this person, you know, but there are times when for no reason that I can think of, I just get swept away by who my wife is and the fact that she's in my life and that your life, you look at your bride, or you look at your boyfriend or girlfriend, whoever you're a paramour in your life. And that person also allows you to see all the different ways your life could go. But the beautiful thing about being in love is you don't regret that.
Right.
You don't have any regrets about that.
Right.
You know, but my friend Ryan, he just holds a very special place in my heart. And I was having dinner with a friend when I was back in Michigan with my mom and my brother. And I went to go have dinner with a friend. And then Ryan was there. He's working at the restaurant. And I was like giddy. You know, I feel that way. I also feel that way about, it's not as strong, as intense a feeling, but I feel that way about, I feel that way about Sam Rockwell.
Amazing.
Yeah. Like Sam and I are acquaintances and we know each, you know, we have not spent enough time together to be friends.
Right.
But if we had the time, if we could afford the time to spend together, we would be dear friends. Sam Rockwell and Rob Corddry and Rob Corddry's wife and Sam's girlfriend, Leslie Bibb,
I love Leslie.
And my wife, I want to eat them. I want them in my body. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I get it.
They're the best.
I just love, I know that feeling. And I just think that we should all be so lucky to feel that way about people. And I encourage everyone to not be afraid to just be in love
just
with
be in
friends.
Love with something. Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? I totally agree. All right. I've got to move through this. This is the best ever. Okay. The last category is going to be, you can, transport yourself to any time and place. Could be a historical event, could just be an era, and just kind of be a fly on the wall and sort of observe it in a way that you wouldn't get to in real life.
I'd love to be able to live knowing there'd be no disease or
yes,
trouble.
Correct. You're safe. You're all safe.
Love to live on a boat that somehow goes from the Parbury coast to like North Carolina in the 1720s. I would love to be a pirate.
Great.
You know what I mean?
Great.
Or a privateer, you know? And then I'd also love to be able to kind of, it would be lovely to be like, I'm thinking of the era of, you know, like salons, not the Enlightenment, but like Dorothy Parker.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And sit around with those people and listen to their razor sharp wit. And then I'd also love to know what it was like to be, I'd love to just be a groundling. At the Globe, you know.
Great.
What would that be like to be a groundling? Like you're like 1598 and watching. I'm getting my theater history right now. I can't remember who was alive first, Garrick or Burbage. But to be able to watch one of them perform, you know, you have to take those opportunities
for
in
it
your
to
life.
Be fresh for all of the stuff that has informed so much of our contemporary artistic culture.
Exactly,
it's brand new, it's fresh,
yeah,
it's crisp.
Could you imagine seeing? It has to be something like seeing Star Wars.
Yeah,
if it's 1601, and you're just going to see Hamlet,
right?
I'm going to go see Hamlet.
What are you guys doing Shakespeare's, tonight?
What are you guys doing? Let's go. I want to go to see Hamlet.
I might skip it.
Yeah. I don't like Ed, you know,
right.
Edward Norwich.
Right, right.
I don't like him. I'm bringing a bag of tomatoes. How about you? You know?
Yeah.
And so like what would that be like to have that experience to see Burbage act, or you jump 200 years in the future and see Ira Aldridge act? Or, you know, I'm a theater geek, so like I'd love to be able to see Sir Herbert Beerbohm Tree act or Henry Irving. I mean, what was it like to be on Broadway
Absolutely.
In the 1850s and 60s and
Absolutely.
See people perform? It would be crazy.
I love it. I love it. I love that one. Okay, real quick, I'm just doing this little quick thing, and you just tell me when to stop. That's
okay.
all. Could be fast or slow.
Stop.
Okay. Okay, I'm pausing this. A minute.
Sure.
I announce this. We're done.
Gotcha.
All right. I'm very excited to announce to you your 100% guaranteed MASH future. A lot of great stuff going on here. You really have some great stuff to look forward to. I want to congratulate you on. I want to congratulate you on your apartment in Sri Lanka.
Oh, dear.
I don't even know how that's a thing, but you have a beautiful apartment in Sri Lanka.
Uh-huh.
This is a handy thing that you wake up tomorrow having for that reason, for actually several reasons. But you wake up tomorrow completely multilingual.
Oh, boy, that's terrific.
So I encourage you to communicate with as many people across the world
as you can. As I please.
It's delightful. I also want to say I'm a big fan of your music, your musical, The Dog Man. I don't even know how that works with dogs on stage. Are we seeing dogs at Wild Pack
Wild
Dogs on stage?
We do have dogs on stage.
Or are we doing like cats where it's like they're people dressed as dogs?
Well, I was thinking about actually having dogs on stage.
I'm into it.
Yeah.
I'm into it. Almost want to see like a transparent, like a net between that they can't, they wouldn't be able to. Anyway, it all takes place in a giant net on stage. That sounds like a fairly exhausting role. I want to reassure you that when you want to relax afterwards and just have a giant piece of key lime pie, that is ready and waiting for you. I also feel like these two kind of somehow work together, but I don't know how. Your soundtrack of the original Eagles music,
mm-hmm.
that is just Keegan Eagles music.
Keegan Eagles music,
the
Keegles.
The Keegles. and the fact that you are able to jump into an experience that get it all over you, that feeling from Days of Heaven. It's just all over you. And then I think that only leaves the fact that you also were able to travel through time and be a pirate in the 1720s, Barbary Coast, North Carolina. And I will say that you are also very blessed to be sharing all of this as much as you want with your very, very dear friend, Ryan Carlson.
That's so sweet.
Right?
That's the sweet thing.
That's a great future right there. Look at that imaginary lovely land.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thank you so much for doing the podcast. The final piece of this puzzle is that I have been forcing all of the guys who have done my Boys of Summer series, since it's unique and I will be returning to women, you're the last man.
Right.
The
last dog man.
Is to sing a snippet of Don Henley's Boys of Summer.
Oh, wait a minute. Okay.
I don't even really care if you remember the real lyrics.
Wait a minute. I got to think of, wait a minute. How does the chorus?
He goes, can see.
The last thing. The last
it starts
thing.
Out. It starts out. This chorus starts out. I can see you. Your brown skin shining in the sun.
Oh, yeah.
You got your head thrown back and your sunglasses on, baby. I can tell you my love for you will still be strong after the boys of summer have gone. And the as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.